Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, The Downfall of Saubhari Muni. And what have we got here? So we're starting on text 52, but we've actually got 54 on the board. Okay. Tatra taptva tapas tikshnam Atmadarshanam Atmavan Sahaivagnibhir Atmanam Yuyoja Paramatmani Tatra. In the forest, Tatra, executing austerity. Tapaha, the regulative principles of austerity. Tikshnam, very severely. Atmadarshanam, which helps self-realization. Atmavan, conversant with the self. Saha, with. Eva, certainly. Agnibhi, fires. Atmanam, the personal self. Yuyoja, he engaged. Paramatmani, dealing with the Supreme Soul. When Saubhari Muni, who was quite conversant with the self, went to the forest, he performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire, at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'm just going to go back to text 52 and 53, which are the preceding verses. Ekastapasvyaham atambasi matsya sangat panchashad asam utta pancha sahasrasagaha nantam prajam yubhaya kritya manoratanam. Sorry, manoratanam. Maya gunai hrita matya vishayerta bhavaha. In the beginning, I was alone. And engaged in performing the austerities of mystic yoga. But later, because of the association of fish engaged in sex, I desired to marry. Then I became the husband of 50 wives. And in each of them I begot 100 sons. And thus my family increased to 5,000 members. Oof. By the influence of the modes of material nature, I became fallen and thought that I would be happy in material life. Thus, there is no end to my material desires for enjoyment in this life and the next. Evam vasankriha kalam virakto nyasam astitaha vanam jagamanu yayus tatpatnyaha patidevataha. In this way, he passed his life in household affairs for some time. But then he became detached from material enjoyment. To renounce material association, he accepted the Vanaprastha order and went to the forest. His devoted wives followed him, for they had no shelter other than their husband. Text 54. When Sobhari Muni, who was quite conversant with the self, went to the forest, he performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. At the time of death, fire burns the gross body. And if there is no more desire for material enjoyment, the subtle body is also ended. And in this way, a pure soul remains. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Chaktva Deham Puna Janma Naiti. If one is free from the bondage of both the gross and subtle material bodies and remains a pure soul, he returns home back to Godhead to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Chaktva deham puna janma nayati mam eti. He goes back home, back to Godhead. Thus, it appears that Sobhari Muni attained that perfect stage. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Litam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, the story of So Bhari Muni is quite instructive, informative for us. It is appropriate to analyze how Sobhari Muni got into the situation that he was in. According to my understanding, Sobhari Muni's austerities were performed in Braj. Right? He was performing his a great yogi, a very, very powerful yogi. Yet, despite his potency, and we see how potent a yogi he was, in that when he became agitated by the activities of the fish, whom he was rather partial to the fish, inclined towards protecting the fish, right? What got him into trouble was that he impelled by this strong desire for sense gratification because of the association of the fish, he came out of the Jamuna after having performed austerities for thousands of years. Amazing. Thousands of years, and he decided, I want to get married. But when he came out of the water, he was kind of a wrinkled up old man, right? And obviously, as a wrinkled up old man, and you could imagine, you know, with slime, and if you've been underwater for 10,000 years, you're not going to be very attractive. In fact, you'll be decidedly unattractive. So he took he made a determination. I will transform myself into a handsome, attractive, desirable, and irresistible young man. Which is probably most of us have that. Wouldn't mind that. At least at my stage, at this stage of my career, that's not unattractive idea to want to be young again. But the interesting thing is, he was able to do it. He transformed. So when he approached, I've forgotten the name of the king, Mandata, yeah, who had 50 very attractive daughters, he approached the king. And the king said, my daughters can marry anybody they like. Right? So as it turned out, he was attractive to all of them. Married all of them. And then by dint of his yogic powers, by dint of his yogic prowess, and by his expertise in chanting mantra, he was able to create palaces and gardens and servants, both male and female. So he was able to create, by his mystic power, and it's mentioned in the text, his proficiency in chanting mantra, he was able to create practically a perfect environment for his material pursuits, for sense. So an incredibly powerful individual, incredibly powerful. Yet, despite the fact that he was very, very powerful, his apparently, you know, material prosperity or material position in which he could enjoy sense gratification as much as he wanted, practically speaking, it was a fall down. It was actually a fall down. Of course, many people would think, whoa, that's okay. Materialistic people would think that's all right. But for Sobhari Muni, it was actually a fall down. And why did he fall down? He was inclined towards the fish in the Jamuna. And Garuda happened to come upon this place. And Garuda wanted to eat the fish. Right? And Sobhari Muni made a curse, right? So that Garuda couldn't take his meal here. And so Prabhupada explains, and the commentators explain, that this was actually a Vaishnav aparad. Right? He committed Vaishnav aparad. And so as a consequence of offending Garuda, and because of his inclination towards protecting the fish, he had to fall down from his position of great austerity and advancement, being able to control the mind and the senses for 10,000 years underwater is symptomatic of great advancement. He was able to perform these austerities because of his practice of austerity. But despite the fact that he was such an advanced tapasvi, that advancement wasn't sufficient or wasn't strong enough or powerful enough or potent enough to protect him from the reactions of offending a devotee. Right, so this is important for us as devotees, that despite the positions that we might have, despite the advancement that we may have made, despite the knowledge that we might have accumulated as practitioners of bhakti, we have to be very, very careful to avoid pride in our position and avoid committing offences to the Vaishnavas. And even if the Vaishnavas appear to be at fault, or there appears to be some taint in their character, we shouldn't judge them or think ill of them and offend them, lest we fall down. This is the example here. Sobhari Muni offended Garuda, who, you know, he's a devotee who eats fish. He's a bird, but he's still a Vaishnava. So we have to be careful, and especially as beginners, as neophyte devotees, because the tendency of a neophyte devotee is to think, I'm the best devotee and can easily find fault in others. Now, there's a symptom of a Kanishtha Adhikari is, according to the Bhagavatam, according to Rupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, a beginning devotee tends to think of themselves as being the best or the better devotee. We have to guard against that mentality very carefully, lest we commit offences to the devotees, and then as a result, despite whatever advancement we might have made, we may lose whatever advancement or whatever potency or power or prowess we may have accumulated as the result of performing our devotional service. Of course, the benefit remains, actually, but it's like Prabhupada gives the example of having money in a bank account, right? But for some reason or other, your card and the PIN don't work anymore, so you can't do any withdrawals, right? You lose access to that sukriti, or that the results of that, assuming that bhakti is pious. Of course it is, it's the most pious. So so Bari Muni is a very good example for us as to what one shouldn't do. Then he was performing his austerities, and by all measures very, very austere and very, very renounced, but he was disturbed because of that offence. He was disturbed just by the sight of two fish engaged in union. That disturbed him. And this is another, so we should avoid offences. Then another point that Srila Prabhupada makes is we should be careful about association, right? Because despite the fact that Sobari Muni was performing austerities in the sacred Dharma of Vrindavan, right, where ordinarily one is bestowed with great mercy and great many, many benedictions, he was associating with the fish. I guess that's what happens when you're performing austerities underwater, right? You don't get a lot of association other than with fish. So Prabhupada mentions one has to be careful. Even though we may be in the holy Dharma of Sri Vrindavan, if we're not taking advantage of the right association, we can severely damage our devotional practice, our devotional progress, our devotional advancement. Prabhupada explains in the beginning of the first canto, or in the first canto, about visiting holy places. And the real purpose of visiting a holy place is to associate with the devotees and to hear from the devotees. It's not that we visit the holy places just to be a tourist. We may be a transcendental tourist, but we're not going there for tourism per se. But the real purpose of visiting the holy place is to take advantage of the sadhus or the saintly people that reside there or that happen to be there. And we hear the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and the pastimes of the Lord from the lips of the pure devotees. This is the real, the purpose of visiting a holy place is to take advantage of the association of the devotees there, and primarily here. Of course, this is the purpose for which Srila Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and is what we do wherever we go around the world, right? And as a result of that, and as a consequence of that, we have good association wherever we go, of which we can take full advantage. Such that Prabhupada said in Melbourne, "This is not Melbourne. This is Vrindavan." Right? So wherever the hearing and chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, where there's the hearing and chanting of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the other corollary literature, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then that's the environment where we get the right association. And of course that association also then protects us from committing Vaishnava aparad, because we, by that association and by that hearing process, we are fortified, we're strengthened, we're protected by the proper understanding of our Krishna conscious philosophy, so that we don't commit offenses. We maintain a service attitude. That we're here to serve the Vaishnavas. We're here to make friends. Kanishtha Adhikari thinks he's the best. Majjhima Adhikari makes friends with the devotees. And so in the process of making friends, we know our friends' weaknesses. We know their foibles. We live together so closely, we know each other better than we know ourselves, practically speaking, right? But Majjhima Adhikari looks for the good in others. He sees the faults. Not that we don't see the faults, but we see we see the good qualities of the Vaishnavas as eclipsing whatever minor faults they may have. Otherwise, if the faults are, if a devotee is attached to sense gratification, or they may chant Hare Krishna but they have bad habits, then Rupa Goswami recommends, Srila Prabhupada recommends, don't associate with those devotees. So there are some devotees that we should keep a distance from, but not criticize, but just keep a distance. Their association may not be the best, but the mood of the Majjhima Adhikari is, let me make friends with the devotees, let me serve them, and let me assist them in, they'll assist me, let me assist them in making spiritual progress, spiritual advancement. And of course, you know, being friends, we don't criticize each other, but rather we appreciate the good qualities in all of the Vaishnavas, and in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we engage in devotional, you know, these are our austerities. You know, it's mentioned here in this verse. So Bari Muni, and it's interesting, he's Atmadarshanam, Atmavan. He is conversant with the self. Right. So he was, and we can see from his powers that he was self-realized, at least this is what's described here. And that desire for self-realization is demonstrated in his performance of these austerities. Right? Tatra, there in the forest, we can assume in the forest of, or the forests around here. Taptva, tapaha, tikshnam. So he was very severely executing austerities, tapaha, and it's translated here, the regulated principles of austerity. Right? And here, then next, the next word is atmadarshanam, and that's translated as which help self-realization. So there are austerities to be embraced, or to be to practice, and they are those that help us make progress in our spiritual advancement. And you know, part of our austerity is that we have to live with each other, and work cooperatively. This is the trick. In ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada has given us major projects to pursue and to fulfill, right? And none of us are going to do it by ourselves. Not possible at all. Prabhupada said to the GBC members, you know, not one of you alone, but all of you together, right? And this is a symptom of a Madhyamadikari, is that making of friends, friendship, and in that friendship, cooperation. In other words, a Madhyamadikari is a preacher. So Bari Muni was expert in austerity, slightly different austerity, and that austerity enhanced his advancement and his progress towards self-realization. And we can understand from this verse that he was successful, as Srila Prabhupada says at the end of the purport. Thus, it appears that Sobari Muni attained that perfect stage. And what is that perfect stage? Within the fire of his leaving the body, he, Atmanam, the personal self, himself, Yuyoja, Parama Atmani, he engaged himself, and it's mentioned here that he understood who he was, and at the time of death, when he left his body, he engaged himself, Yuyoja, in Paramatmani, in dealing with the Supreme Soul. And Prabhupada says here, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he achieved the highest perfection, the highest goal of life. So similarly also, we perform austerities. Maybe not of the kind that were beneficial or appropriate for Sobari Muni. You know, sometimes in Kartik, devotees take a vow to not eat sweets, right? Or other serious types of tapasya. Some good ones: go to Mangalati every day. That's good. Chant extra rounds. There are some austerities that we perform that are actually very beneficial. But mostly for the members of the Hare Krishna movement, Srila Prabhupada did not recommend austerity as such. You know, fasting, giving up things artificially. You know, usually what happens with the devotees, we see this a lot with the younger devotees, they eat lots of, because we always encourage people to eat prasadam. This is our main austerity, right? Eating prasadam. So as a young devotee, we decide, okay, no more big plates. I'm going to have a small plate, right? But of course, they get a small plate, but then what do? They pile it right up. Right? Or if they're eating only a small amount, sooner or later, they raid the fridge. They lose control. So, you know, some austerities are better than others. And for most of us, the main austerities are no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, and no illicit sex. These are our main austerities. If you can do that, your life will be perfect. And of course, chant 16 rounds and help Srila Prabhupada in his mission. But in one sense, the major austerity that we should perform, or that we can perform, is to go out and preach. This is our main austerity. We've got to work with each other. That's hard enough, right? But then, in order to really be successful in and there's a reason for that. Prabhupada wanted us to exemplify the best of behavior, so that when people came into the association of the devotees, they were impressed by the dealings. Right? It is an austerity, but it is one of the best austerities, because we then demonstrate how Vaishnav culture is the best culture. Right? There's the story of the Prachetas. Lord Vishnu appeared to the Prachetas, who'd also been performing austerities underwater for tens of thousands of years. Right? Now, why did Lord Vishnu appear to the Prachetas? Was it because they'd been underwater for so long? No, it wasn't. The reason why Lord Vishnu appeared to the Prachetas was because of their mood of cooperation, because of their peaceful and amicable dealings with each other. Huh? It's an austerity to learn to work together. Okay, follow the regulated principles, work together, and then, you know, one of the major austerities to go out, do Harinam, do book distribution, preach, fundraising. You know, these are the things that Srila Prabhupada engaged us in. These very, very practical activities of book distribution, fundraising, preparing prasadam, running restaurants. And all of this is actually hard work. It's very hard work. But these are the austerities by which we can establish Krishna consciousness, by working cooperatively together, demonstrate Vaishnava dealings. And our main austerity is to give Krishna consciousness to others. This is how we can become perfect. Of course, we come to Vrindavan, and especially in Kartik, to strengthen our Krishna consciousness, our resolve. This is the main reason for coming to Vrindavan. But you know, it's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada didn't do this. He did once, I think. He came and he spoke on the nectar devotion, right? But he himself kept preaching. Of course, Srila Prabhupada is unique. Prabhupada was Nitya, you know, just such an exemplar. There's certainly no harm in coming to Vrindavan to charge the spiritual batteries. But the reason we do that is to go out and preach, to give Krishna consciousness to others. This is also the symptom of a Madhyam Adhikari. Recognizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, recognizes the devotees, makes friends with them, identifies the demons, the asuras, and steers clear of them, and identifies the innocent and encourages them to become devotees, practically speaking. So we can take advantage of Sobari Muni's example here. Don't offend devotees. Keep good association and perform austerities that are beneficial for us to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And so I put it to you, preaching is our main austerity. Giving Krishna consciousness to others is our main austerity, apart from following the four regulated principles. If following the four regulated principles is an austerity for you, sort that out first before you go and preach. Right? Because Prabhupada says, if we're not fixed up, then our preaching won't be effective. Right? But if we can become practiced, chanting, associating with the devotees, getting a higher taste, param drishtva, is what we need, then with that higher taste, and that's why we're here in Vrindavan now, get that higher taste so that we can then be very fixed up and then give Krishna to others. I think I'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? There's somebody at the back there.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class. There are some things which beats the bonus. Like, I'm given to understand for birds and other species, other than human beings, there is no karma. How is it that the activities of a fish or garuda vis-a-vis Saubari Muni activities, how does it constitute the Vaishnava Parat? And what came to my mind. And secondly, Saubari Muni, he had a very high level of intelligence, he had a lot of austerities. In spite of that, why did he have the propensities of yoga? And what's your suggestion to this forum as to how to get over this yoga propensity?
Enjoyment.
Yes, enjoyment propensity. And if a person like Saubari Muni could not get the immunity, how can we as common mortal human beings develop the immunity towards sense gratification? To throw some light on the very
thankful. Okay. The first question was, how was Garuda and the fish's behavior offensive? The answer to that is it was Saubari Muni who was offensive, not Garuda or the fish, right? And you know, very often we may be agitated by external events or the appearance of actions or reactions in our external environment, which trigger responses in our hearts and responses as a consequence of past association, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how the mind is a reservoir of past association, and not only from this lifetime but from previous lifetimes, right? And so when a similar image or a similar situation or event is manifest to our senses, that brings up responses within the heart from our past association. And along with that, desire, right? And so it wasn't that... It was Saubari Muni's response that was inappropriate, not Garuda or the fish. He was. I'm making some assumptions here. He wasn't able to appreciate Garuda's position as a devotee, and so he restricted him from what was his natural. Propensity to act, and he should have recognized that in Garuda, but it appears, this is my logic or my reasoning, it appears he was favorable to the fish. He spent 10,000 years living with them for a start, and you know, fish are pretty cold. there's not a lot to like about a fish, right? But anyway, he was inclined towards the fish, and so therefore he protected them from Garuda. But that was an offence to Garuda. So, within his heart, there must have been that desire for material enjoyment, and it only required a little impetus right? To then, poof, out it came. And I think all of us have, well, at least I can speak for myself, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're studying the Bhagavatam, we're rendering service, and then just out of the corner of our eye we see something, and then boom, all of a sudden we're overwhelmed with confusion. And usually it manifests as a consequence of Rajaguna, right? This is what Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Rajaguna is the cause or the impetus for action, and Arjuna says, why do we act? Even though we know we shouldn't act, why are we pushed to engage in sinful activities? And Krishna says, Rajaguna. Huh? Was it karma, esha, krodha, esha, etc.? So, what was the second question?
How can we get over the propensity for sense gratification?
Associate with the devotees. Associate with the devotees. I teach the disciple course a lot, and one of the lessons is the four regulated principles, the vows that we take, and we ask the devotees, what are the challenges that you have in following the four rules? Right, and very often the devotees will say, "Oh, I'm at work, and you know, I have to associate with my friends, and they want to go to the pub, or you know, to the bar, or you know, I'm at my parents-in-law, and they don't want to eat prasadam." But usually, they come up with things like that. But this last course that I gave, I had a very bold, courageous group of devotees, and they said, well, we're concerned about the definition of illicit sex, because in our group there's a debate. Is illicit sex sex outside of procreation, or is it okay if you're married and then in marriage it's all right? Nobody's allowed to bring up prasadam because, you know, eating prasadam is not breaking the not eating prasadam isn't breaking the regulated principles. Little subtle point. You can still be a vegetarian. So we had this discussion, and one of the in the exercise we asked the devotees, okay, what's the solution? Okay, first of all, we identify what the problem is. And this is a major problem for many of the devotees, the four regulated principles, and especially the fourth principle, right? The toughest to follow. And they came up with some really good solutions, which is the whole purpose of the exercise, not to focus on the problem, but what are the solutions? And they said, well, the first thing is, we've got to get a higher taste. You've got to get a higher taste out of Krishna consciousness. And the best way to do that is to associate with other devotees who have that taste. And then by associating with them, you'll do the same things that they do. Which is, well, what do we do? Chant Hare Krishna, hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We have our morning sadhana program. Huh? It's all pretty simple. So Prabhupada says, actually, it's automatic. Krishna consciousness is automatic. So we're scratching our heads thinking, if Krishna consciousness is automatic, how come I'm not making any advancement? Huh? Which means we're not following the process. And that's a tough realization to come to when you've been practicing, you've been chanting Hare Krishna for 40 years or 50 years, and you're still getting overwhelmed by Rajaguna, right? So we've got to go back. Sometimes even we've got to go back to Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, please help me. And of course, Prabhupada's instructions are going to be 16 rounds, attentive rounds, right? Follow the regulated principles, go to Mangalartik, you know, render service, go out and preach, you know, make some challenges in your life. So in that way, and there's many ways you can do it, but generally good association helps us to get that higher taste. And then with the higher taste, we don't even notice that those other things are there anymore. That's the it's all there, but with the higher taste and with absorption in Krishna consciousness, it's like it's not there. Huh? So there's a few tips, I think.
Thank you.
From my experience. Hare Krishna. Okay, it is now 9:02. We have a question over here. Okay, quickly. I wonder what the question is going to be.
Hare Krishna. It's about a sensitive question, and I invented this beforehand. So you talked about what I understood from the class, it's about offences.
Yeah.
And I forget the other point, so while we are doing devotional service, sometimes we get preaching. Thank you, Krishna. So you said about...
We get what?
I was just trying to remember my other point. So my question is related to offences and preaching.
Yes.
The authority.
Usually the authority is a person.
So
yeah, but yeah, go on.
So if the authority...
The authority, the person. Answer. Let's call them the person rather than the authority. But
more than one.
Yeah, keep going.
So, yep. So I'm just praying that I can get my question right because I'm asking this to certain devotees. So the authority, because of Adhikari's observation, it becomes clear that they have a mixed motive for their service, and
sorry, I missed that last bit. They have a...
Yeah, if they have a mixed motive...
A mixed motive, yeah, got it. Yes, yeah.
But that could be costing other devotees' spiritual life because they're going to leave.
Yeah.
So my question is not about those devotees, actually. My question is, how should the, if you would like, victims, how should they deal with it? Because then they begin to leave the temple.
Yeah.
And when they see these devotees who have caused them pain, because they're in a managerial position and they're causing heart pain to certain very sincere individuals, what should the devotees who are suffering, how should they deal with it? Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's good. I got you. Very often we, well, certainly my experience, I joined the Hare Krishna movement and one day found myself in the Srimad Bhagavatam class looking around at everybody and thinking, if I had a choice, I would have chosen none of these people as my friends. And I tell you, one of the devotees, the temple commander at the time, He was a bully. It was plain and simple. And 10 years later, he came to me and he said, Aniruddha, he said, I'm surprised that you didn't bloop after all the things that I did to you. Huh? So this is not an uncommon problem that... Now, by the same token, there were other devotees who protected me, looked after me, preached to me. The temple commander, what he used to like to do is in our temple, the evening kitchen cleanup was one of the biggest austerities that you could ever do, right? So I'd been probably to the market in the morning to buy the boga, and somehow or other chanted my rounds before going out on Sankirtan, and then come home at 6 o'clock at night, thoroughly exhausted. And then the temple commander would say, "Have a guess what, Bhakta Andy? You're doing the kitchen cleanup tonight." Great. Thank you. Although, mind you, I did like the kitchen cleanup because it was an opportunity to just throw yourself into doing service, and everything, all of your problems, all of the issues, they just dissolve after half an hour in the kitchen just getting into it. Anyway, I remember one occasion I had been brought to tears by the temple commander, and I had decided, that's it, I quit, I'm out of here. And there was another devotee, the Bhakta leader, and he came up to me and he put his arm around me and he said, "Look, it's okay, it's all right." And in Prabhupada house, we have some guest rooms, right? You know, the blue room. So he said, "Okay, you can stay in the blue room tonight. You don't have to get up for Mangalarti tomorrow. Just have a good sleep." Because, you know, very often, many of our emotional problems can be solved by just having a good night's sleep. I don't know if you've noticed that. Even the people that we have to deal with, just go and have a good snooze. Forget about the whole lot. And so, but anyway, so we do have to tolerate, in ISKCON, we do have to tolerate ourselves, and we have to tolerate others. And sometimes devotees in management positions have an onerous responsibility to get things done. That's their service. Right, Panchagoda Prabhu? You've got to get stuff done. So that requires putting a bit of pressure on people. And,
actually, it's not about this temple. We have a wonderful Hanadeva. He's a super, everybody loves him totally.
I'm not even suggesting that he's a great example of a wonderful manager. But anyway, let me finish. So, sometimes we also have to be... Because I'm also a manager. I'll state my conflict of interest right from the word go. And so, you do find yourself in an unenviable position where you've got to work with the people that you've got. You've got Prabhupada set the standards, you're trying to hold the line, and that means conflict or tension, you know? We're trying to manage multiple conflicts of interest and get the best result for everybody. So sometimes we have to be tolerant. Now, Srila Prabhupada said, if you're not getting on with the local management, you can choose to go somewhere else. So we do have the choice, and it's valid. You know, if you're not getting on with somebody, go somewhere. And what happened to that temple commander was he was the one who blooped, not me. So I stuck it out and he blooped. So and I'm not I shouldn't be proud of that, but we do have the right of choice. Right? And so we can, if you find that a temple environment is not to your liking or your needs are not being looked after, then you're welcome to try your luck somewhere else. Right?
Can I ask further? No.
It's time for prasadam. No. I've got to go and teach. And I don't have a solution for this problem, but you do have options. One of them is go somewhere else. Okay, speaking of going somewhere else, we are now going to go to the Prasadam Hall. Mahaprasadam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantarashimad Bhagavatam ki jai.